You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith. Today I'm talking to the Cagoules, a fantastic double act, Claire and Nikki. They dress in lightweight waterproof coats and don't speak and do physical comedy, but it's not necessarily the sort of physical comedy that we usually have and talk about on this show. In fact, one of the things that delights me the most about the Cagoules is how they don't really fit into any box. They sort of... I say this as someone who loves their act. It doesn't really work on paper. It's a hard sell, I think, to describe it. And it doesn't really fit into, what's the phrase? It defies categorization. And I went along to see the show. I'd seen them do sets here and there and enjoyed it. And then I went along to see Cirque de Cagoule at the Edinburgh Festival, just gone. And within a few minutes, I was sort of sitting there going, who is this audience? Who are these people? What is this thing? 5 or 10 minutes in, I was thinking, is this, and then something just clicked and I just felt like, oh, I get this. And I just sat there with the biggest smile on my face for the rest of the hour. Big laughs, loads of really daft stuff. And often the laugh is, well, sometimes the laugh is at the audacity of how daft it is. And sometimes the laugh is in a sort of characterful way or at something else they're doing. They're a lot of fun. You can see their stuff like a lot of, I mean, I'm forever saying this on the show. You can find them on YouTube, but there is absolutely no substitute for seeing them live and just letting yourself get caught up in all the silliness. I will chat to you about where you might be able to see them and indeed tour and other administrative things in the middle. But now, this is the Cagoules. So, welcome, Claire and Nikki.
Hi.
I know that I know you. We've seen each other at gigs around the place, but we've never kind of gigged together. We've never done a long run together or a car journey together. So I know you, but I don't really know you in comedy terms. Tell us about the Cagoules. In fact, no, let me start with this. I saw the Cagoules last night, not for the first time, but I think it was the first hour show of yours that I've seen. And I sat there, like the first 5 minutes, I was going, right, what is this? What is this? There's lots of crowd work in the first 5 minutes. And all the stuff with the, you know, coming out with the instruments and stuff. I wanted to give too much away. And about 10 minutes in, this smile broke out across my face. And I sat back in my chair... And it didn't, my face hurt afterwards because I had been smiling and laughing throughout at this fucking ridiculous thing that you're doing. Tell us what you, I absolutely loved it. Tell us, for the benefit of people who don't know the Cagoules, what it is that you do.
Well, firstly, a cagoule isn't a word that everybody knows outside of the UK, which we found the first time we went to Australia and other, well...
Everywhere else.
Is it only a UK word?
Yeah, well, it's French, obviously, originally.
That's not obvious to me.
Oh, sorry. we were shocked first time we went to Australia because people were coming to the show and having no idea that what we were wearing was the word.
Gotcha. So they just thought cagoule was a random word that you'd come up with something uniquely Googleable for the sake of fun.
It's actually just a coat.
Okay. It's a lightweight waterproof coat. Yes.
We often get called the Cagoules or the Cagoules.
Because to someone who doesn't know what a cagoule is, you've given yourself a weird foreign sounding name.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So anybody who doesn't know, a cagoule is a lightweight rain jacket, and we wear them hoods up, and so you can only see our faces. And specifically, a cagoule is one that you don't zip all the way down the front, so it's over the head sort of thing.
Is that right? Mm. Never knew that. Okay.
So that's, yeah, so we wear those and we don't speak.
It's physical comedy. There's no language. It's very silly, but it's slapstick. We always found it very difficult explaining what the cagoules is to people.
Because it sounds awful.
Yeah. we did the BBC tent, was it last year or the year before? And it was predominantly sort of women in their 50s in the audience. I don't know why it just happened to be that night. And they sort of came out afterwards and they were just like so sort of overjoyed and said, if you'd have said to me, do I want to go and watch two women prancing about wearing coats, rain jackets, I'd have said absolutely not. So it's sort of one of those things that you kind of have to see it to know exactly what it is.
Okay. Is that because it has a kind of weird alchemy whereby it's great, the experience is greater than the sum of its parts?
Yes, we do say it's an experience. It is. Yeah. That's the best way to put it, actually. It's more of an experience of, the audience getting on board with the silliness, but they're not quite sure why or how.
And not that we're similar really in any way, but sort of Blue Man Group say that it's an experience. And, you know, if you said, do you want to go and watch some people painted blue bashing drums, you'd be like, no, I'm all right, thanks. But it's sort of that experience of being in the room, I think.
Not that we're as good as that.
I've never actually seen the Blue Man Group. I feel like I know what they are, but I couldn't describe it. Is it mainly instrument? Like, I feel like it's instruments and paint.
I went to see it years and years ago, and I came out feeling like I'd been uplifted. Like it was a celebration of joy through, and they don't speak either, and they were just playing drums, and there was paint going everywhere, and that's pretty much it. But it's not more than that. But I left feeling joyous. Yeah, and that's kind of what we tried to create.
Yeah.
And what was the origin?
Well, we used to be called Wilkinson Ford, classic, just last names, double act. And we did some of the sketches and things like that. And then these were, I think it came from originally from just seeing a couple who from the outside looked like they'd been married for years and years and years, and they were wearing matching coats.
Okay.
Sat on a park bench, getting their Tupperware out, eating their sandwiches together. The first sketch is...
But looking straight ahead, not looking at each other.
Yeah. Okay.
So our first sketch...
That's kind of critical somehow, isn't it?
Yes.
The direction
sat
of
next
the eye
to
contact.
Each other,
all
no
right.
conversation, yeah. you know.
So we did a sketch about that, didn't we? And we both wore these cagoules and we sat with our lunchboxes and opened them up. And for a while, we did just that. And they were in our sketch shows, weren't they? And every sketch show we did, we changed everything else but the cagoules because everybody seemed to like that more than everything else.
Yeah. Okay.
So in the end, we just went, let's just scrap everything else and just do the
that
cagoules.
That hilarious sketch we've got about Lionel Richie. Is that
always died. Yeah. Always died, that one.
How is that before... that's interesting. Let's stay with that and who you were before that and why that sketch show originated and what it meant to you to drop... the thing, because I'm familiar with that idea that comes up on the podcast from time to time. When writing jokes, you write what you think is your clever joke, and it turns out that the setup gets a big laugh, and then what you thought was the punchline gets nothing. Mm. And it feels like it's that reaction writ large.
Yeah.
So how did you come to be doing a sketch show together?
We were both unemployed actors, ended up living together purely by chance because we actually went to drama school together, but we weren't really friends.
Which one?
In drama school, Mountview.
Mountview, okay.
Yeah.
Any other comedy luminaries from Mountview?
I don't think so.
No, it was actually more of a musical theatre school.
Okay.
But we did the acting course.
We cannot sing.
Okay.
No.
Oh, totally. I went to circus school and was like, I'm not doing anything in the air. Like, I'm a ground-based guy. I've chosen my...
You know your strength.
Yeah, exactly.
So, went to drama school together, and then, like, years later, we just, weren't doing anything. We went, should we just do something?
We both kind of had interest in comedy. You were working in a comedy club, weren't you? And I was doing comedy characters on YouTube and stuff. And we just one day just said, oh, let's just do something together. And then...
Yeah. How long ago were you doing comedy characters on YouTube?
Oh, only a few years. Like, okay. There was no traction or anything.
Sure.
I just thought it was hilarious.
I'm just trying to think in terms of the timeline. I feel like the cagoules have been around for 4 years, 5 years.
Yeah, it's not
about
long.
5 years.
But
yeah.
So those characters would have been more 15 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, which is kind of a birth of YouTube, isn't it? Like, YouTube's 2005?
Well, we've been a double act for 8 years. So we're doing stuff for a couple, 2 or 3 years, and then we just did the cagoules for the last 5 or 6. Is that right?
Yeah. I'm just thinking, like, to be knocking out characters on YouTube, that feels like you must have been an early adopter rather than someone who, oh, right, everyone's doing characters on YouTube now.
I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God, were you the first person to do a character?
I was the first person. Don't look it up.
yeah, let's say that.
But there, I mean, the reason I mention it is because one of the things that strikes me about the cagoules is that you seem to operate outside of the ecosystem of clowning and mime and physical theatre.
Yes.
I feel like you're one of those groups or acts which has sort of invented itself outside of an established path.
Yeah,
you're right, because we're not Gourlay clowns, we're not... We try and describe it as physical theatre or physical comedy because it's, you're right, it's not really mime. We don't mime anything. We haven't got any talent like that. I mean, in our if we're doing a club set, we won't do that. We won't use this. But in an hour show, we use the screen, and we always use that screen.
Yeah.
And we've done that actually since even when they were sketches. Okay. We would walk into the screen and
the screen, for the purposes of people who've not seen it, is a huge backdrop cloth that you can walk behind that has a perfectly fitted and sized video projection on it.
Yeah.
So when you walk behind it, you're visible as if you're still there.
Yeah. Gotcha. So we could be anywhere and doing anything at that time.
Yeah.
Sometimes really works, like we've done underwater versions.
I've seen that sketch and it's incredible.
We loved that one. And sometimes it really doesn't work. It's really not funny. It's just mildly interesting.
Okay.
But we've always done that with them as well. And so, but it's literally, if we go to a club, we can't. It takes hours to set it up. Yes.
Okay.
So, and that wasn't answering your question.
So you were doing YouTube videos, and you were working in which comedy club?
The Funny Side, Covent Garden.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah. I would have met you back in the days. Then.
You would or wouldn't?
Yeah, would have.
Yeah, I think so. Okay.
I worked there for quite a long time, and I sort of would just, you know, see the audience to their seats and introduce the MC onto stage from backstage.
Okay.
And I loved it. And for it in its heyday, it was 5-6 nights a week. Saw Robin Williams there. That was like...
Jesus.
Yeah, incredible. So that was like... I'd always stand at the back and be a bit like, oh, I wonder if I should give it a bash one day. Yeah, so that's how I started doing stand-up from working in there.
Okay, so so you do stand up now,
yeah,
and you don't do stand up. You do character.
Characters, yeah.
Okay,
I've done sorts of bits and pieces, yeah.
Okay, so you put your sketch show together, and how long did the sketch show live before you let go of it?
3 years.
Yeah,
was it?
3 years. We didn't do the circuit doing sketches or anything. We just thought we just put an hour show together and came to Edinburgh in 2011.
Oh yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, great.
That's what you do, isn't it?
Oh,
The Gherkin Fantasies, it was called.
Okay. Where were you? What
Chow
time?
Roma.
Chow Roma.
Yeah, okay. Tough room.
Yeah. 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. First show of the day.
We were builders somewhere else. We were builders as the Mosque Kitchen.
No, it wasn't even that. It was an Indian restaurant which didn't even exist. So we were building a place where they wouldn't have even been able to go to find out that we weren't there to then go to Chow Roma. So it was really hard. But
yeah, it was tough.
It was great. Like, it was good experience. And I don't think we did it most days. Nobody came.
Oh, mate. Yeah. That's tough. I mean, that's something... A comic recently put on Facebook, like 2 days ago. It's been, I think that we're in the very early part of the festival as we're recording this. It will go out in a little while. But I think it's been a really tough opening few days. I feel like a lot of comics this year have been very upfront about going, guys, I had literally no one in yesterday. I want to pull the show.
Yeah.
I had two people in. And I feel like that's sort of It's tough. I think maybe this is this year maybe saturation point in terms of number of acts per head of the potential audience. But I also think it speaks to a kind of honesty that normally people are sort of so busy self-promoting, they're unwilling to go, oh God, it's, we're flailing.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that experience, because I think people listening to this may have had that experience or be about to have that experience next time. How do you keep your morale up when you're having the canned shows and there's no one turning up?
I think being in a double act helps because you've got the other person.
It really helps.
Because we both know doing, myself doing stand-up, Claire doing characters, and you know that doing that on your own is, you know, much harder. The plenty of people we've listened to on this podcast, the drive home from a gig when it's not been so good by yourself is hard. But so we, it, that means we can share the bad times and also the good times then as well.
Well, it, with the cagoules, we've never had like tears or anything, but solo we've had tears. Mm. You know, I'll be walking along the street going, and she's like, how's your show? I'm like, oh, it was awful. Oh God, it was so terrible. And so, yeah, we have that in a single capacity, but double act, we always go, oh no, that was awful gig, wasn't it? Yeah, it was awful. And you know, you just go away and
you could be conspiratorial about it. Like, oh, those guys were dicks.
Yeah.
Or we were awful, you know, whatever. And that you have to accept that as well. You know, we quite often can be.
Yeah. Weirdly, sometimes one of us will think it's gone really well and the other one will think it's gone really badly.
Really?
Yeah. And I think it's down to perhaps your frame of mind going into the show. Do you find that? If you're sort of in a, not in a great place or not feeling in a certain way and you try and gear yourself up, which most of the time you do, but very occasionally it's sort of, it's hard to, and then you might kind of, the show might have gone all right. I mean, it's never been like such an extreme that it's been brilliant and the person thought it was terrible, but if it's kind of been an all right show, it can tip like either way with one thinking it was great and the other one thinking
that
it wasn't.
That is interesting. It feels like it's almost like you have a control in the experiment. If one of you's feeling pretty good. I mean, that's, oh God, I'm just thinking the amount of stand-up gigs I've done where it would have been great to have a version of me in a totally different mood, live the same experience and take notes afterwards.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something, there might be some connection there with how, like, if you have a great gig, you listen back to it and it's never as good as you remember. And if you have a bad gig, you listen back to it, it's never as bad as you remember. Do you know what I mean? It's like, actually, it's all a lot more medium a lot of the time.
Yeah, that's true. But I was going to go back to that two people in a room in Edinburgh, your average audience. We had a great experience 1 year, didn't we? First time we did the cagoules, when that guy, we had one person turn up in a 80-seater room and he wanted us to do the show. We said, well...
So in the first show we had so with the screen that we're talking about that we use, in the first show we had a point where we would take an audience member, dress him in a bear costume and take him behind the screen. So it was pre-filmed with a bear in someone else, you know, someone else was in the bear. Our director, Johnny Freeman, came in and so we were like, no, you don't understand. If we do the show, there's going to be a point where you're going to be behind the screen. No one's watching you. That's definitely the hostage situation or something, you know, like, and it's sort of not, when does that stop being a performance and start being some weird like experimental art piece?
But he kept arguing, he still wanted
to leave.
So did you do it?
No.
God.
I took a tenner out my purse, I think, and just said, look, there is your ticket money back. Like, we can't, like, you know, we said like we needed a minimum of five people, really.
The moment you step on stage, the show ends because there's no audience to watch
then it's not a show, it's
it's a private dance. That's what it is.
It's just weird.
But for years we'd have that problem of, well, we, you know, what's our cutoff point of how many people we get in the room before we do it? And and it's higher because of the audience interaction.
Sure.
Higher than you'd normally, you know, if it's just you talking to people, you might do it to five people or whatever and just
or
think,
three.
Oh well.
Yeah.
If they don't mind. But we couldn't do that. And so for years we had that problem. Of, you know, Edinburgh and other festivals you go to, sometimes on a wet Wednesday you will get that quite often, and especially as people don't know you.
And it wasn't us being sort of, you know, drama queens. It was like we needed a character from the audience to use for one section. Like we do a Baywatch scene, so we need somebody who could be a lifeguard. And the bit that, you know, they have to pick Claire up. So you couldn't pick a 80-year-old lady who's, not, you know, it just wouldn't work within the scene. So so there not only had to be like a minimum of about 5-7 people.
They had to be the right type.
my street show that I did for years at Covent Garden, I needed 12 strong men. And I didn't need to physically hold a rope that I was going to climb up. I had to clamber up on one of their shoulders and stay there for ages.
Wow.
Yeah. I stayed on the rope for 10 minutes at the end, walking on it with all of them pulling it like tug of war style. And absolutely, I mean, on a in a wet Wednesday situation, there'd be people who are just like, I'll just go out there with my straight jacket. I could just use one volunteer and, you know, do the show to three people. If I need 12 grown
That's
men
quite a lot.
Who are at work now.
And when you do... I've always wondered on the street, because people can walk away, can't they? So if use... We've had times where we've... Because there's, you know, callbacks with the person coming back on stage. So often we've had... If we've done stuff kind of outdoors or whatever, they've walked away and it just ruins
and
the
you
end
go,
of
oh,
the...
Oh, over there for the callback. Nope, not happening.
They've left.
And you can't say that.
We can't say it.
Because you never speak.
Yeah.
So when we have tech troubles as well, like on the first day in Edinburgh, you know, you saw our show, so the first... video.
Yes.
It is like an acrobatic scene. And mistakenly, we had the first video also put in at the end. So on our first show a few days ago, we did the show and then the big finale was the same video was at the beginning. But we couldn't explain it to the audience.
Ah.
So we just had to sort of cut it halfway through and then go, thank you very much.
Oh, my Lord. What's the last video supposed to be? What's the final video? Is it the...
It was supposed to be like a reprise of everything else.
Gotcha. Okay.
But that's not quite right yet.
It still needs work, that bit. But yeah, it was the whole entire opening video. Here's the grand finale. What, the thing we've seen at the beginning?
It's a coda.
That's weird.
Actually, it's Italian. Yeah. So well, that, I mean, that throws up another issue. What do you do to rehearse the bits? Because you need audience members and to know how they're going to work and what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Well, quite often we're just shit at the beginning. We are. We have to be to find out. But we do write it. We do write the show together, physically write it. And we'll rehearse together and speak as we're moving. Because otherwise we can't see each other.
Okay.
So we have to know what each other's doing. I mean, obviously we can see each other a bit, but most of the time we're facing forward. So we'll get, so I'll go, oh, and I'll go over here and get this. And why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? You know, and so we'll speak it through.
Okay.
And then...
Oh, as in you, because your gestures will be what's going on.
Yes.
So you'll actually say that out loud in order that you're communicating properly.
Yeah.
That's weird, isn't it?
So well, it is. It's one of those outside of the ecosystem things. That's like... What a peculiar way to work, but of course that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. It makes sense to us. When we go and do a gig and we'll do that, and if they don't know who we are or what we do...
You mean the tech?
The tech person. So we'll say like, oh, so when I'll go, oh, why are you doing that, Claire? And then she'll go, And then they just look terribly confused. So we have to say, just watch this video of us. So you, and then they're like, oh, okay, so...
Oh, it's this,
You don't actually speak. Okay, right, it just takes, a bit of time to...
Explain it.
Yeah.
We're not doing a good job now.
When you started, when you were at that Chow Roma sort of gig, how many years did you say 3 years you did the double act?
We just did two shows in three. Yeah, three. We did three full hour shows. The first one in Edinburgh, and then we didn't come the next year.
Okay.
So that was 2011. The next year we didn't come. We just did a show at...
We did it in London.
Camden. Yeah, we did a show in London, and then we came up every year since then. But so that was the second Wilkinson Ford show, but the third one in Edinburgh. Sorry, second one in Edinburgh, but the third Wilkinson Ford show. And then this is our fourth Google show, fourth hour.
Okay.
Yes.
So when you first used the Cagoules as those characters, was there a different quality to how the gig went?
Yeah. We didn't use music for a long time.
Yeah.
And when you die and you don't speak and you don't use music... The worst death you've ever had. Do you remember the charity gig in Leeds?
Yeah. Oh. See, I don't remember it as being that bad.
This is a great leveller. It wasn't that bad. But what I mean is, when you first worked with the Cagoules, was there something that you went, oh, this might be from that, just from that first sketch when you were doing Wilkinson Forward? Was it clear that this might be a thing?
Yes, it was.
And
straight away.
Yeah.
Tell me about that, the first time you noticed that, the first time you felt that.
Oh, I wouldn't be able to tell you when, but people would come up to us afterwards and say, oh, what about those aliens? Or somebody said, what about those magpies that you were playing? And we were thinking, what magpies? What are you talking about? You know, with the coats on. Magpies with coats on? Don't know. But people would always talk about that rather than anything else we did.
Okay.
So then, at the end of the show, we'd just go, oh, maybe should we just try and do that for longer? And then we'd do like, then we just went, oh, we'll do an hour show.
Yeah.
who was the first person to say, let's just do this?
I don't know. I think we just both felt it, did we? I can't remember the conversation.
We never reveal things like that.
Nice. Right. So did it feel like a great moment? You're like, hey, we've got something. Or did it feel like, oh, we've been doing the wrong thing? Do you feel like you had to give up the other stuff you've been working on? What is that? Because that's quite an unusual way to create a thing, is I do show A, and a little bit of it is apparently Head and Shoulders better than the rest. Mm-hmm. So to kind of slough off that the rest of show A, did that feel like it kind of cost you something emotionally, or did you were just kind of pleased that you had a thing that worked?
It was scary because we didn't know whether that could work.
Whether it could sustain.
Yeah. We didn't know if we could do an hour of not speaking. That's, that's not what we were trained in. So we didn't know if that would work, but it did.
Because you are properly trained actors. Mm. Yeah. Because you went to actual drama school.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we weren't so attached to all the other stuff that it felt like we'd lost a leg or something.
Okay.
The crap Lionel Richie sketches. We were happy to just let go of it and say, let's try this and let's see if it works. And then doing the first hour, it did. I mean, again, we still didn't have so many audience members in Edinburgh to feed that back to us. But those that did come.
And we started really noticing people were really happy that they'd discovered us.
Okay.
But that only happened when we started doing the cagoules, and it didn't happen before then.
Yeah.
And other acts would start to come, and other acts would start to bring people. And when we started to notice what we considered famous, circuit comedians turning up in the audience, people were like, oh, this. Rob Deering in the audience, and people like that. We're like, oh my goodness, that's amazing. And then, Eddie Brimson came, and then he came again the second time in the first year, and he brought a promoter with him, and people, and we started to think, oh, there's something in this. There's something, yeah. So yeah, it was exciting that first year, even though we were still playing to one man.
Yeah,
okay. It was exciting because then things started to happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was the first bit of that first show that you felt like, we've got it? Was there like a particular routine or a particular sketch?
I don't think so.
You mean in the first hour?
In the first hour or the first kind of, is there, I don't know, like, because you've so clearly got hold of something. Do you feel that? You're like, this is, hang on a minute, we've got this.
Yeah.
So I'm just interested in the moment when that first, like if you were stand-ups, I know you're a stand-up, but if this were stand-up, the moment when it's like your first gag or your first routine that you go, oh, I think this might be the voice. I think this might be the thing I should pursue.
Mm. It would have been back in the sketch, when we were doing the sketches, because they were so, and quite often, like you say, Head and Shoulders above the other sketches that we... Yeah, we knew there was something.
It was probably more the characters than an actual bit. So it was like, oh, these cagoule characters could do anything. Like what happens if we do this and what happens if we do this? So in our show, it was sort of just them, the characters that were doing the different bits rather than one specific bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so when you made the first show, what's the difference now in how you write? Is there a difference in how you create a show and how you collage the thing? What's the starting point? You go, like, when in the year do you go, right, let's start making the new show?
It takes such a long time.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a new show.
Yeah.
Cirque du Cagoule, but we had the idea for it this time last year.
Yeah.
And we knew we had to have a first draft of it by October if we were going to have any chance. And it will still take at least probably another 6 months to get to the point where it needs to be.
So we did it at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival in March, April, a version of it. So half of it was still little bits from the old show. And so, yeah, since October to now, it just changes all the time. And what's differed to the process of writing it now is that we just get rid of bits that aren't working quicker, don't we?
Yeah.
We used to just try and be like, oh, no, we can make that, like, that will be funny eventually. And now we just go, nah, get rid of it.
So out.
It's
quicker.
Not working.
Yeah.
Okay. So what were you doing in Melbourne? Were you doing last year's show and then some previews, or were you booked there to do anything and the anything was effectively previews for this one?
We were booked to do Cirque de Cagoule.
Okay.
Don't tell the people in Melbourne it wasn't the full show.
No, I think lots of people, I think that's an accepted practice to rotate in new stuff.
Yeah. So that we used Melbourne as a platform. So we were trying different things there really as well, and then still had bits of the previous show, Tutti, in this show. And so, but I think we'll probably take it next year because writing a new hour show for us every year is just, it's just a lot of work. And so I think the pattern has been really that we're kind of doing it 2 years
back to
now.
Years.
So we'll start it in Melbourne. We'll do it in Edinburgh, still working on it in Edinburgh. And then we'll take it back to Australia next year and it'll be, you know, 10 times better than it was the previous year, and then maybe do it in Edinburgh next year as well.
I've heard you say this before. It's a real shame once you get your show to the point where it needs to be, then you have to scrap it and start again.
Yeah.
And we've just sort of said recently, haven't we?
Let's not.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Oh, accepted practice. What does that mean to a comic?
Yeah.
Like, you know, who cares?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
do your thing.
Yeah. As long as you say it back with the show, that, you know, you're not lying to any audience members about what it is, apart from the people in Melbourne.
So this is the Cagoules. Great fun talking to Nikki and Claire, Nikki Wilkinson and Claire Ford, in fact, who, as you'll hear, do other sort of solo stuff as well. But isn't it nice to hear a double act who are so mutually supportive? I'm not saying, hey, listen, don't start listening back to all the other double acts that have been on the show and trying to find the fault lines. But I mean, in some ways, that's my job. I suppose there is a little wicked part of me that is reminded of a wonderful street performer and a very good friend of mine, Vince Henderson. Vince always used to try and break up me and Noel in my street double act, the Unknown Stuntmen. That's telling. He was the only one that did any stunts. We were a double act called the Unknown Stuntmen, and because we did stunts which were unknown, and Vince always used to try and break us up, like in a comedy kind of tongue in cheek way, and he'd always be like, as a sort of riff, he'd always be telling us, what are you going to do when he leaves and goes off and gets famous? He'd be having that conversation with both of us simultaneously, and I suppose there is, whenever I talk to a double act or more, there is that kind of like, I'm going to break these guys up, sort of. Little, you know, conceit, if you will. And obviously with if you remember the episode with No Such Thing as a Fish, actually chipping away and sort of probing at what are the fault lines, what are the power dynamics, what's the power play at work, that yielded some really interesting results. The Cagoules are so robust in their friendship and mutual love and support that they are completely bulletproof to that sort of chicanery. What a sentence. Well done, Goldsmith. First thing on a Monday morning. So more from them in just a second. You can find them at The Cagoules. That's K-A-G-O-O-L-S and T-H-E as well, if you want to be specific, at The Cagoules on social media and www.thecagoules.com. Do I remember Stephen Fry years ago saying that we should just say wuh-wuh-wuh because there's far fewer syllables than www. You can get my tour details at www.comedians. I absolutely am never going to say that again. comedianscomedian.com/tour, and you can follow my social media presence, such as it is, at ComComPod. And listen, it's been a long time since we've done a sort of Twitter game. My all-time favourite was when we did name the tribute acts to various comedians, and people would tweet with things like Beta K. I mean, come on! It works less well if you pronounce it beta, but who does that apart from Americans? So if you've got an idea for a Twitter game, let's have one of them. Someone tweet at ComComPod with an idea for something. It's hard to think of a game, isn't it? I had to think of some features for a radio show recently, and that is hard when you have to sort of sit down and rack your brains. You've got to go right back to basics on your creative process on that. So if you have an idea for a Twitter game, throw one at me, he lazily said, expecting everyone else to do all the work. The tour's going great. A bit more about that in the after blurb, if there is one. But for now, let's return to Claire and Nikki.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you say it takes a lot of work to make a new show, is that what kind of proportion is the work? Presumably the video stuff. Like, you, before you can video anything, you need to know exactly what the routines are. You need to have choreographed it all.
That's one of the biggest things is, yeah, we have to have a really good idea about the videos. And quite often, like even in this show, we've scrapped so much of that we've filmed because we've tried it out and it's not worked and we've had to scrap it. So we've had quite a few filming days where we've had to refilm, then we've got to scrap that. There's some stuff we're going to have to scrap again.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, and we can't change it on the fly either. We can't change it whilst we're in front of an audience who aren't going for it. We go, oh, sorry, this is going to be it now.
Yeah. Okay. So talk to me about filming the swimming pool bit. Because that's incredible. That's on your website. As I saw the clip from that. Yeah. Which show was that from? Was that from Tutti? Yeah. So when I first saw it, like, you dive in, you run into the sides of the screen, and I thought, oh, this is clever. They've put a blue filter on it and they're lying on a floor. Mm. And then I went, oh, no, they're actually underwater. You're underwater in a cubicle, which doesn't seem safe.
It wasn't safe.
So where and when and with whom did you film it? That's such an epic...
It was in Froome, near Bristol.
I know Froome.
Yeah, and it was sort of a B&B place, and they had a swimming pool in the back.
Basically.
And they
no swimming pool would allow us to do this because the health and safety really was non-existent. We got a friend to come over and just, like, point a stick in if one of us looked like we were drowning.
Well, we didn't even do that in the beginning. So this lady let us film in the back.
She didn't know what we were doing, so we just said, oh, can we just do... Yeah. And my old uni friend, Mark Sharman, he's an underwater cameraman, and he...
handy contacts.
Handy, exactly. He lives in Bristol, and so he came with all his stuff and very kindly filmed it for us. And he came with weights and things like that, stuff we hadn't even thought of.
Of course.
We've got to sink to the bottom, you know, things like that.
Yeah, and, so we'd have like weights around us and we'd be at the bottom. I remember I was the first person to go and I was in the bottom, had weights around my waist, my ankles, in my back pockets as well, filming it. And we hadn't discussed the getting out part.
Oh, so God. I was just at the There'll bottom. Be scuba divers listening to this thinking, get out, work on a plan and train for 3 days.
That's what I was going to say. This is what the pool's used for as well, is scuba divers. Like, she rents it out for... So we just sort of went, oh, yeah, it's just something... You know, we didn't really fill her in too much with what it was.
Oh.
So, yeah, then our friends who had gone with us just... I was sort of like, Mark's like, get her out! And they'd poke a stick in and then pull me out and then... Okay, we'll have a plan of action after this.
Or at least an order in your head. I'll get rid of the ones in my pockets first and then undo my belt. And that probably will take me 10 seconds.
I just panicked.
But that was that water scene was the second time we'd done an underwater scene.
Oh, yeah.
The one you saw. Because we did one in the previous show as well.
Yeah.
But it wasn't so complicated.
It was when I drowned in the first show, yeah.
So that was just like a drowning scene. Whereas this one... that water scene, we thought, oh, let's go back to Froome.
Yeah.
And do that again, but do it like as in a, you know,
synchronized
yeah. swimming sort of thing, yeah.
Which is really hard to even just stay still in the screen. Like, because you've got your legs on in the screen, in the water, and then in real life, our top half is coming out the top of the screen. But keeping your legs still in water, you know, you sort of move about a little bit. So it was hard to just stay still, because if you were moving about on the screen, you've then got to do that
in real life
with your top half.
Yeah. You know?
So finding stuff to put behind the screen to stand on to be, it's always like been our problem in different places as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, if we'd had the money for pine wood,
a soundstage specially built.
Yeah.
And do you work with a videographer to kind of work on special effects or stuff? You do it all yourself?
Yeah.
My first degree was in TV production, so there's an element of that. Nikki's first degree was in contemporary dance, so that's why we have so much dance in it.
Okay.
So we sort of bring our other elements to the show.
Is that how much of that is by design, and how much of it is just like you like that makes so much sense that one of you knows how to video stuff and the other one knows how to choreograph dance? Like, oh yeah, of course. Like, where else could this have gone? There's two women in cocoons underwater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the limitations of the cagoules and the way that you work? Because what you do, you just kind of whip up this ludicrous, it's just daft as a brush, and the audience are loving it. And I've seen you do like a, you know, a 10 or a 15 minute thing, and it's an unfollowable kind of raucous interactive environment. What are the limitations of it?
In sort of career wise,
or, oh well, I mean, if you like, yeah. I mean, we'll talk about that in a minute. But like, I mean, kind of creatively, what, how are your options? Because you benefit a lot from the fact that you are so visually recognisable. You have this. I don't know if you've sort of considered this, but one of the things about the clown's red nose is they say it's the smallest mask in the world because you put it on and suddenly your eyes become huge. If you look at like Boy with Tape on his face, that the gaffer tape over his face makes it look like he's got huge eyes. Mm. You have a similar thing whereby you've cut off everything apart from your face, so your face is already very expressive.
Huge face.
Become massive. You know, they become enormously expressive.
Yeah.
There are all those advantages. What are the disadvantages?
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if this answers the question fully, but it in the fact that we're quite unique is a great thing on a bill. That also could be a limitation because people think they won't like it. So it's hard for us to kind of get ourselves out there. People just think they won't like it. So that's sort of a limitation.
Why do you say that?
But like I said about the lady... who saw us last year, oh, I wouldn't like two women in cagoules. It's very difficult, and it's very much a live thing at the moment. So even seeing it on a video doesn't necessarily come across as how it is in the room. So that can be a limitation.
Because you've gone for such a strong flavour. Like, you've gone for, this is the choice, we've made this choice.
Yeah, we can't adapt to fit into whatever it is. That's just sort of what it is.
On a practical level, we couldn't go on and do panel shows or anything like that, could we?
Sure.
Yeah.
So we are limited in that sense, but that also, no language and all of those things can open us up to, say, the Asian market.
Do you work in Japan?
Not yet, but we're trying.
Oh, you've got to work in Japan, guys. Yeah, yeah, okay.
And they're all about double acts as well in Japan, aren't they?
Of course.
So
we are limited in like, you know, your traditional stand-up TV route. But we are not limited in terms of the world.
Yeah.
Okay, so there are those kind of benefits to it. And, of course, one of the most obvious things is that you must sweat buckets. I mean, like, it's the worst thing. Yeah. I once did, when I was at college, we did a show with four of us where we were wearing painter's overalls, like those kind of complete suits, those white suits, on top of full evening dress. Wow. And it was a reveal at the end that it kind of came out, and we were booked to do a gig in Sardinia in the desert. So we're in the desert with the sun beating down, and it looks, you know,
first time we went to Australia, we did Perth Fringe World. It was a heat wave they hadn't had before, so it was like 46 degrees or something, and
we're in a tent.
The air conditioning's broke, so we're in a tent. I mean, we were stood there before even we bowed with sweat you know, dripping into her eyeballs.
The audience were they hated being
in
there.
Yeah, they were just sat there like, why are we all doing this?
Just dreadful. And so that's our worst one. But most of the time we don't notice it until we come off the stage and then we take our hoods off and our whole hair is all stuck to our hair. Yeah. It's disgusting.
When we start making the big bucks, we'll get someone to make us a breathable cocoon.
I was going to say, have you tried other versions? Are there any fabrics out there that are breathable somehow?
Because it's just nylon, isn't it? It's that terrible. And it's all inside. It's
They're meant to be waterproof, aren't they? So
Yeah. So it keeps everything in.
Is there not another type attractive? Can you drill holes in them? Have you tried adapting the things?
No.
Never tried. No. Don't you do you.
What we did in Perth that year, we found a solution. So we just wear a black vest underneath. And so we just used to sit in cold water, put the black vest on so that you were nice and cool before the show started. And then,
gaffer taping, little trick. Ice blocks, ice packs and stuff. Yeah. And then, Jesus.
Yeah,
So talk to me more about the dynamic of you as a double act. Like, it's obviously sharing the successes and the failures. That's really positive. Is one of you the boss? Is it all completely democratic? Is one of you, not the official boss, but does one of you...
No.
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 We've found our roles, like things that we do. So
go on.
Well, I'll do the heavy lifting. I'll pack the car.
She's the packer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to make sure things go, you know, we know where they are in the thing, so I'll do all the packing.
And that means that you know where they are.
Yeah.
I have the same relationship with my wife.
Do you?
I put the things in there, I'm in charge of this. Don't do it that way. Yeah. There's a system that I've arbitrarily decided.
Yeah,
and I just look at the system going, all right, whatever. we do have our roles. And interesting you bring up your wife, because we feel like it's a marriage.
Okay.
Yeah, because we, and that's why it's working for so long, is because we are in a marriage that's good. She's looking at me like,
I feel like you're about to propose.
This is a very beautiful moment.
Wow, I was talking about packing the car.
That we give each other freedom. We give it, you know, if one of us makes a mistake, it's never a blame situation.
Yeah.
We make a lot of mistakes. We leave a laptop in a venue. We leave a prop. We leave this with it. It's never, we never get angry with each other. That's really important, because it's a team situation.
Yeah.
If one of us has made a mistake, we've both made the mistake. That's it.
You guys, I've never heard a double act talk like that before. That's incredible.
I've
heard
myself. If I remember when I left the Super Soaker on Cowgate, we were just walking to a gig, and I was just really annoyed with myself. But then you get, you said, "Don't worry, it's a bloody Super Soaker. We'll just get another one tomorrow. It's fine." So
We have to be like that, because also the freedom thing. If one of us wants to do something in a solo sense or gets a role in something, we have to just go, okay.
Yeah.
If that's something you want to do, that is something we've decided. We have to decide it together.
An incredible... I've literally never heard anyone talk in that kind of way before, of going, if you want to do that, then that's what we want to do.
Yeah.
Do you ever argue?
Yeah, but not...
Probably once a year. Yeah. It's not very often.
And what sorts of things kick that off?
Often it's just like if you're stressed and tired or something, and it would just be something that's... on another day perhaps wouldn't, you know?
Yeah, something silly.
The biggest argument. Before we, decided to, yes, let's go for this. Like, so in the early days, we were doing something, I don't know, we'd bought a prop on, we were in Clapham in London, we'd bought a prop and it was a teddy bear with a heart that said, I love you. I can't even remember what the argument was about?
No, it's always a stressful situation. Like, we're getting a show together and we were about to preview a new show for the first time that night.
Yeah.
And so we had to get this prop, and it was really important we had this teddy bear that we didn't use in the end anyway. You ended up walking off down
Clapham High Street.
We were
just shouting at each other on Clapham High Street. But she's holding this teddy saying, I love you, which just really added to the...
And she walked off and I went, Nikki!
And then she came running up to me.
I went, I'm sorry. And we had a big hug with the teddy bear and everything. Yeah, so it doesn't... Yeah, we wouldn't be able to last this long. It's been eight years.
Isn't it, to a double act? I mean, I know, lots of double acts kind of... They say they'd... didn't get on and double acts in history or whatever, but you couldn't drive around and do what we do without getting on.
No, the amount of times we spend...
we finish each other.
we spend hours and hours and hours travelling together on planes, in the car, wherever, just together all the time. We've heard each other's stories about our previous lives over and over again. And it's mostly me. And Nikki listens to it every time and doesn't say, I've heard that before. She just listens.
I'm just going to pick on the phrase, previous lives. Oh. Like, do you feel this is a... this life that you have together is...
Right.
It's a new life.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's something that's, it's certainly very, we're living a very different life to how we used to live.
Yeah, and it sort of trickles out into everything else, doesn't it?
Mm.
Partners and family and, you know, you're sort of part of Claire's sisters, like I'm sort of the fourth sister. And, you know.
And I share Nikki's parents because my parents passed away and... Nikki's parents are now like they've got a room for me in the attic. They call it Claire's room.
Oh man, this is just a wonderful story. And you've got lots of sisters.
I've got two sisters.
And you an only child?
No, I've got a brother.
And you've got a brother.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
We don't share Simon.
No. He's off on his own. Budney. Yeah.
And is it difficult? Do you have partners?
Yeah.
And. Did they get on?
This is quite a recent thing, really.
Okay. They haven't met yet. They're about to meet on Friday.
Guys are so excited.
Oh, no, they have met.
They have met.
But he wasn't my partner then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What are your favourite qualities about each other?
Oh. Oh, God.
Nikki can create a party in any room. Like, if Nikki walks in and she wants the party started, she will be able to make it. And she won't let it end either. She will not let a party end. As you know, at the beginning of our Kegel shows, it's a party. We want to create this party atmosphere. Yeah. That's always coming from Nikki.
Okay.
At the beginning of a show, or we're writing a show, she's like, right, I want to start with a party, and then we end with a party.
Just trying to spread the joy, man.
That comes from Nikki, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
haven't
got me.
It's a party. Claire is a very good listener. Like, you know, if you've done something, like, really bad, or like, she's just a good friend. Like, if you've done something really bad, she'd help you bury the body, kind of thing.
Oh,
I'm not saying I've killed anyone. If I accidentally kill someone, Claire would help me bury the body.
And
you can tell Claire a secret, and she absolutely won't tell anyone else. There's a friend of Claire's has told her a secret, who's another comedian, and she will not tell me what it is.
I will say this. Oh, no, I'm saying the comedian, so I won't say the thing.
Yeah.
That's right. So, I won't say who it is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I see. Okay.
So it depends which way around.
So it's like a double blind. Yeah. It's like a cipher.
Yeah. So even though we are, like I said, practically married in terms of how much time we spend.
Yeah.
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 And you're like that as well, then.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not like a gossip or anything. I just think you're very loyal. That's your best quality.
That's good.
And what winds you up about each other?
Oh, I knew this was coming.
Sometimes I feel like we're in counseling now. Sometimes, keeping a secret, sometimes you do that about yourself. So it'll be like, there'll be a problem or something, and she won't. And she'll just be in a mood, a general mood. And I don't like that kind of. Like, let's just talk about it and you can share it with me and then we can, you know, get on. So I'll just ask her if she's all right about 20 times until she snaps at me. I'm fine. And then I go, all right, she's not going to talk about it, so that's cool. I think that, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mine's probably the same as the good thing.
I wondered about that.
Yeah, yeah. The party never ends. So, yeah, sometimes towards the end of a festival, Nikki will be partying round the clock, yeah.
Claire doesn't like fun.
Do you have the same level of ambition?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what is that? What do you want from the Cagoules? Or from your other careers?
We want to be, like we were talking about worldwide shows, we want to be on that Blue Man Group type stage. You've seen that our screen. We make that screen. Well, actually, Nikki's dad made that screen this time. And then Linda went and got it sewed by a lovely old lady Maureen up the road.
I noticed your hula hoop had a tearaway, Velcro. That was very nice.
Yeah, we make everything. And that's good on some level, but we've got ideas that we've always wanted to try, like coming down on, what do you call it?
Harnesses from the ceiling into the screen that way.
And stuff like that. And there's piranha fish underneath and we're going up and down or something like that. And we've got ideas like that we can't do without the big productions.
Yeah.
And so, we would love to have that. And, putting everything away when you're all sweaty, and we would love to have
a tour manager.
Yeah, sure.
I had a slight diva moment just in my own head yesterday. It's 3 meters wide and almost 2 meters tall. Our screen, so it's big. Is that the right dimension? Yeah. And we have to carry it past, and then there's everyone else's props there, and you've got to slide it through in the side of the stage, and I'm sweating, and I've had my head in a bowl, and I'm just in my head, I was like, I can't wait for the days when someone does this for me. I'll probably still pack, but I just like the heavy,
She likes kind to of pack still.
Carting stuff around is, it's just tough. Because as a stand-up, you turn up, you need a mic, And we...
I carried a case with me for years. I became a stand-up, I was like, the rule is no props ever. At the moment, I'm using a laptop to use a projector, but I'm desperately trying to work out a way of doing it with my phone, so I don't even need to carry my laptop out of my house.
Totally. It's, it's
potential for loads of things going wrong as well.
Yeah.
When you're using props.
Yeah.
And tech.
Your vision of, you mentioned Blue Man Group a couple of times. Do you ultimately want to franchise the act and have a couple of Korean ladies being the Cagoules, Chinese ladies being the Cagoules? Does that interest you, or is it that you want to be there, but you want to tour for the rest of your lives?
I think we want to
do the rest of our lives.
Yeah, because if you the world dominate the Blue Man Group thing, that feels like a 10-year plan.
Yeah.
And that's, if it's you, that's a lot of, that's 10 more years of...
I'd like to do it just us for the next, till we get to that point, and then we can talk about that. Do you know what I mean? It's very, very physical, our shows, so... I'm packing a bit of Christmas weight at the moment, and it's quite tough, to be honest. So I think it might get to a point where we have to have that conversation about franchising it anyway. But we have talked about it.
It's a lovely thought to get to that point. Our agent certainly wants us to do it.
So it's worldwide. It's touring, and
that's what we'd like.
I'd like little dolls and stuff. Hello Kitty.
Yeah.
Cagoule dolls.
Oh, that's creepy.
Not Hello Kitty. just to be, I want to make money, Stu. That's what I want to do. And we're not really at the moment. It's tough.
We've got to for Howard and Linda.
Howard and Linda.
Yeah. And it is, that's interesting. Are you not making money? I feel like you're a success and you're selling tickets.
Yeah.
But you're not making money.
It's very difficult. Even when we get headline bookings and things like that, we're still splitting the money.
Yeah, of course.
So people don't,
they don't pay you more. They don't give you two hotel rooms either. You have to just either spoon or have twin beds.
We hate that. That is one thing we really hate. It's fine to have twin beds, but we do not like sharing a bed.
Sure.
There's been work we've not got because of being a double act, because the budget only stretches to, and they, they've sort of gone, well, we can't stretch to paying two people, so.
And you're doing.
And you wouldn't survive on a double act, on a solo person wage.
Are you doing corporate stuff?
Not many, no. And we really think we could.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah.
Let's put a pin in that as well. I've got some thoughts on that.
We want to do it all, really. We love doing the show. It's so much fun. So we just want to be doing it and be paid properly for it.
And do you work with the same director every time?
No. No.
Did you have a director on the most recent show?
No. This show, no. Just okay. Yeah, yeah. We might get one in at a point, I think.
Mm.
Might probably be around now that we should probably do that. Yeah, we've had different directors for the last three shows and then just haven't on this one.
How has that been working with different... What have you got most out of each relationship, or what has worked and what hasn't worked in terms of direction? Because you are very much like, you're the unit, you've got the vision.
Yeah. Well, they all bring different things.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing, but... we can't stay with the same director because then that would become something different, I think. Dan Clarkson brought the hammer.
I can't remember which one of you, but I texted both of you after the show about, I don't want to give away the moment, but I did use the word hammer in capital letters. I didn't know about the hammer last year.
Oh, that's a funny thing you brought up. Nobody, even the other day, even Nikki's parents said to me, oh, when you did that thing, and I'm thinking in my head, I'm not going to tell you, but that was actually your daughter that did that thing. So nobody...
They think we're twin sisters.
Yeah. People think we're just the same.
PR-wise, you should probably tell everyone you're twin sisters.
You'll have to learn a northern accent, or I'll learn a southern one. Separated at birth.
Can't remember what I was saying.
Directors.
Oh, directors. Oh, yes. Yeah, it is useful. I mean, in Tutti was Javier Hakim, Card Ninja.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know.
He directed Tutti. And he brought in like a magical element, and we used magic that year for the first time, and that was really useful because he's so talented on lots of different things, isn't he? He's a brilliant director, actually. We'd love to use him again.
It's just nice using different people that bring different elements, and I think there's possibility of it being a bit stagnant if it's the same person.
I mean, saying that, it's the director's job is just to go, oh, actually, when you're doing that over there, she's doing that over there. So, and we have to play major and minor a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If Nikki's doing something that's interesting, I need to either look at her or be still.
Sure. Yeah.
We learned that very early on. We can't both be trying to get attention. That's not a thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes the director's job is just to tell us when that's happening.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
And would you ever work with a director who is more part of the clowning ecosystem?
What do you mean?
Well, like someone like a kind of Dr. Brown type person.
We feel, like you say, we feel like outside of that.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
So no.
Well, it's so... Sorry, go on.
Our first director was Johnny Freeman, who's an actor. Tried a little bit of stand-up, didn't he? But didn't really go down that route. He's definitely an actor. Javier Hakim does stand-up. He's also the Card Ninja, which is a family-friendly show. And then Dan Clarkson, who... directed Potted Potter.
Oh, yeah, I know, yeah.
Yeah, so he's Olivier nominated director, you know. We actually didn't spend too much time with Dan, sadly, did we? Just because of where we were and stuff. He came a few times in Edinburgh, but we literally had maybe one or two sessions with him. Mm. So it's nice to use people from all different, genres of... So not necessarily. So I guess we wouldn't say no to using a clown.
Yeah, no, that sounded really negative. Actually, Dr. Brown was my favourite ever act when he used to come to the Fringe all the time. And
Claire's
in love
with him. Oh, sorry.
He's the one person that I'd, like, if I bumped into him in the street, I'd just go... I loved what he did all that genre, I absolutely adore it. But I don't think we are like that.
Yeah.
It wasn't a negative thing at all.
Mm. Sure.
Yeah. You mentioned Rob Deering earlier. He's since we were like, oh my God, because Rob Deering came to our show in Brighton. in, was that our first show? 2014
or something.
Yeah. And that was when we were like, oh my God, Rob Deering's in the audience.
I feel exactly the same. He was the first ever guest on the Comedians Comedian podcast. I'm a huge fan of Rob. Worked with him last night doing Beat This.
Oh, we're doing it.
Yeah. Oh God. Oh, we're so excited. It's wonderful.
Well, he's now
wonderful.
He's our mate and we're like, oh, it's great. And he's directing a few shows this year, isn't he? So, and when we last gigged with him, he was like, oh, I'd love to direct you.
Oh God. Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah. So we're like, well, yeah, you know, so it's kind of like if we just like people and we find them funny and they know, because you've got to know what the Cagoules is. You have to have seen it and love it and kind of, part of the whole. It could be anyone as long as they've sort of share the vision, you know. So, Rob, directors next year. Yeah.
Finally then, you mentioned before about it being family friendly. That kind of came up. And I noticed there were tons of kids there last night. At what time is your show? Is it 6?
6:15.
Yeah. Is that something that you set out to court as a market?
No.
Because there were a couple of moments I was like, oh, there's a hammer bit. There's, I don't want to sort of butcher any material, but there are a couple of moments which are quite kid friendly and a couple of moments which aren't so much.
Yeah.
So what's going on? What's your feeling about that?
Oh, it's a real endless.
It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
It just accidentally was family friendly.
Because we don't speak, so there's nothing offensive language-wise.
We can't swear and all of those things.
There's some pelvic movements in there.
There's a bit of thrusting.
Yeah, we've talked endlessly about that, whether we can do that.
I like to call it Ford's fun thrust.
if we're booked for a kid's gig, we'll make sure everything is out. But if it's our gig, no. If it's our show, we'll just say, look, it's family friendly. It's up to you, PG.
It's sort
whatever.
Of PG, yeah. We might be listed wrong in the this year because it's 5+, but but it's but
we've
PG.
We've had babies in, and babies love it because it's obviously there's lots going on, and they can kind of understand it in the same way. Mm. And lots of parents will say, "Oh, I only sort of sat in the back because I wanted to see it," and actually, my child just sat there for the whole hour watching.
Yeah, I was watching my toddler and baby coming up, and I think that both of them would. I can absolutely imagine my baby going, being transfixed. You know, there's enough going on, and you know.
There's a very clear distinction for me between a family show and a kids show. And I don't think there is so much for a lot of people. So they just put you in this bracket of, oh, it's a kids show, the Cagoules do kids shows.
Sure.
Lots of people just think that about us. And actually, I think being family friendly is a real positive. It's kind of like you can come with your whole family. For us, we can sell 4 or 5 tickets instead of 2.
Yeah.
What you then sort of fall into the danger of is that a couple without kids think, oh, it's family, so it's not for me.
Yeah.
It absolutely is for them as well.
Yeah, because
for everyone.
We would do better with a drunk crowd on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Than I mean, you know, on a club set, mm-hmm. with a club set. But,
yeah. Truth be told, we don't really like kids in the audience, but it creates a very different show. But if there's a few kids with family and mostly adults, then that's when it's kind of the best. Because you can use the kids for little things like trying to make the kid drink gin or, kind of thing. And it's only funny if there's adults around. That's not funny to other kids. Do you know what I mean?
So
it's not.
It's a hard one. We've been debating it for years, yeah.
Are you happy?
yeah
very happy.
I mean, you've got to be the happiest double act I've ever spoken to. I'm just in love with the idea of if one of us wants to do this, then we both want to do that.
Yeah.
Is there a danger that you get a big stand-up gig or that you get or one of you gets some acting work and it takes you away, and you know, if one of you is successful elsewhere, is that on your mind?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's come up a few times, the potential of. Once you were in the last 10 to be the face of Hull, weren't you?
The whole face of Hull.
The face of Hull. So that would have basically been a whole year working for the BBC and Hull, you know, doing... It was the City of Culture year, so 2017, okay. So it would have been all the radio bits and the TV bits and whatever. Being the face of Hull, just generally walking around waving at people. So I got to the final 10, but didn't do that. I think it's... Certainly with stand-up, I we haven't really touched on this too much, but I don't really do much stand-up. I don't gig regularly because we're sort of at the moment just following the thing that's working. So the Cagoules is definitely working. So that sort of, you know, takes me away from doing that. But you still kind of want to keep your toe in everything else. So, yeah, we'll just play it by ear, I think.
And in terms of happiness as well, we are happy individually. We're not... so if that... Our happiness isn't residing in the Cagoules.
Yeah.
It's not that that's making us happy. If we did go our separate ways and Nikki did get the face of the pole or Scarborough or wherever, it's not... I would still be happy. So I'm happy as myself. And I think that's really important. We're very lucky. I'm not saying it's anything we've done. We're just very lucky to be in happy places in our lives at the same time as this happening.
Yeah.
So it's not residing on it, if you get what I mean.
Thanks, girls.
Thank you.
Nikki Wilkinson and Claire Ford there, the Cagoules, thecagoules.com and at the Cagoules on social media. Cagoules in every instance spelt K-A-G-O-O-L-S, something, something, copyright. So feel free to find them, find their stuff. If you're in Australia, they are always at the Australian festivals. And they are very frequently at Edinburgh, and try and catch them around and about the place, because it's just such a delightful sort of, whimsical isn't the right word, but, you know, it's just daft as a brush and it works despite everything. And I love it. So that's that. Coming up on the podcast, we have Greg Turkington, a.k.a. Neil Hamburger, Chris Fleming, brilliant Chris Fleming, who's certainly worth giving a YouTube. He's huge on YouTube, does some brilliant, brilliant sitcom stuff and very funny music videos, even for the sorts of people that the idea of very funny music videos strikes a chill in your heart. Matt Besser, co-founder of the Upright Citizens Brigade, excellent improviser and stand-up comic. I grabbed him at Montreal. He's coming up probably next week. We'll smash out the episode with Jim Owen because it was so much fun speaking to someone else who loosely identifies as being from Leamington Spa. There's got to be a top quality trivia question in there somewhere. Technically, Jim Owen was born in Lem. Who could believe it? And Carl Hutchinson, one of the northeastern powerhouses of young British stand-up. And we got to put a bit of space in between the Cagoules and Carl Hutchinson's episode because they strike a similar note in terms of being absolutely impervious to mental health problems. Like the Carl Hutchinson one is, it's literally an hour of me sitting down and going, so come on, you can't be this happy. And him going, no man, I am, I'm buzzing. Like it's just that for an hour. And it's very special and lovely. So that's all to come. Thanks very much. There's no post-amble today. It's Monday morning where I am, where and when I am, and I've got loads of stuff to crack on with. You can come and see my stand-up show, End Of, which remains at this point, I mean, not counting Primer, which was really fun, but unfinished. This is the best show I've done, and you can come and see it this weekend at Tynmouth Pavilions on the 25th, Swindon Arts Centre on the 26th, and then the next few dates after that are Nottingham Glee Club, Bristol, the Comedy Box, Aldershot, the West End Centre, Corsham, the Pound Arts Centre, and Newcastle Stand, which is an early show on the 1st of February. I mean, that's in February. What's the point of selling you these dates? Now, I tell you what the point is. Jump on and buy tickets in advance, please, to soothe my beating heart. Newcastle Stand, Glasgow Stand, Farnham Maltings, The Basement in York, Hyde Park Book Club in Leeds. Those are newly on. Those are the 11th and 12th of February. And Cambridge Junction in the big room at the Junction. So please flock along to that in your droves for a full two-hour extravaganza. 2 hours plus an interval on the 28th of February. That's all of that. Comedianscomedian.com/tour. And I will... What did I call it? An after blurb. A post-amble is also called an after blurb from now on. We'll do you an after blurb next week. But for now, let's get on with our lives. Lots of love to you. Bye for now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.